Conferences. Long agendas, big venues, always on your feet, barely getting to see the people that you want to see, and then, of course, the expense. Well, the three of us at Good Morning Hospitality are launching Good Morning Retreats. Our first retreat is this July 8th through the 10th at the Horst Hospitality Training School in Auburn, Alabama. If you go to goodmorningretreats.com, you'll find out more information about our first retreat that we're launching. We have already filled half the slots. We have 20 available and we have about 13 already filled. So make sure you go there, you apply, show your interest, and we'll get you all situated for our first ever Good Morning Retreat. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. And now back to the episode.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to Good Morning Hospitality, your one-stop shop for the latest news, noteworthy trends, and thought-provoking discussions across the industry. From hotels and short-term rentals to all things travel and hospitality, you'll find each episode equips you with the information that you need to start your week. Join us on Good Morning Hospitality every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning.
Happy Monday.
Best day of the week. Let's go.
I'm a little bummed. Two things: that I'm not in England for the short stay show this week and out at one of our castles right now. And I'm also bummed I'm not freezing cold up in Canada for the CanStays conference. But
I know. Here we are. I know. Shout out to all the conferences happening right now. And shout out to Jamie Lane, who gave us some great feedback on CanStays happening, or that happened this weekend. Shout out to Catherine Ratcliffe. You're one of the OG legendary movers and shakers in our industry. So thanks for putting on something super sweet. From Jamie's notes, it sounded like it was the most well-attended conference, especially for a first time, in the sense of the diversity of political and local government. Even national government, property managers, individual hosts, Airbnb itself, influencers, vendors, etc. So it seemed like it was well diversified, which is, I think, refreshing compared to what we're seeing with VRMA and other conferences in the industry. So,
yeah, it's good to see kind of like all the stakeholders in the ecosystem there. I think that gives you like a more robust conference setting.
100%.
100%. Yeah, everyone tends to run to the niches. If you're a professional manager of a vacation rental market, you go to Verma. If you're a host, you go to, you know, Mike Shogren's events. Yeah. So it's kind of niched out in certain ways, but it's cool to see it all start to come together as one industry.
Yes. Shout out to Jeremy Wise, Terry White, all of you guys tuning in. We appreciate all of our live viewers on top of the amazing listeners that tune in every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We love it. It's constantly growing. But how was your guys' weekend? Good stuff?
Yeah, it's nice and sunny here. I got a little bit of a tan, so that was nice. And yeah, recharged for the week.
Both. You and me both, Brandy. Let's go. Finally.
I'm almost a 4-year-old dad. There's nothing wildly exciting coming out of the Golden household right now.
I love it. Terry White, I know you say we're frozen. I just checked on our end. It seems like we're good. So if we are frozen, maybe refresh the browser. We had this happen in a previous episode with our hotel crew. So anyways, we have not a lot of topics, but a lot of deep dive happened today, this morning, especially with the credit card topic and then Google. So without further ado, one thing I would love to kind of do before we transition to these topics is give our partners at Sojo an amazing shout out, because as every week we get on top of the show, it's very automated, right? Like, we know our systems, the three of us plus Jamie, whenever we bring him in every month, we know what we're going to do. We have a system of how we're going to talk about the certain topics, what topics we're going to pick. It's all automated, right? just like Sojo can do the same thing for your amenities. You can put that on autopilot. You don't have to worry about, did you schedule or order the right amount of amenities, the shampoos, the lotions, the everything, right? It doesn't have to be chaotic. So shout out to Sojo. If you get, go to getsojo.com/GMH, you'll get a 30-day free trial and a sample kit to look at and to use for your own properties. So shout out to Sojo. All right, guys, this is going to be fun. I'm a little nervous for this. So I want as much of our live viewers to kind of chime in. We want your thoughts. We want your opinions. I was torn. I was more on the side of we shouldn't lower the credit card fees when reading it by myself. And then talking to you too before we went live, my view is now a little bit divided. So, Michael, do you want to give us a segue into the article kind of topic before we jump into our kind of own opinions?
Sure. So high level, there's a senator that has put forward a bill that would basically reduce fees merchants pay from the credit cards, from the processors. So the average credit card processing fees between 2-3%. And obviously that ultimately gets passed directly on to the consumer. So yes, the merchant eats a little bit of it themselves, but we're all paying for it in the end. And you do that, you know, over years and years, I'm sure this senator would rather that money just go to the government in the form of taxes. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the angle long term. But in the short term, they want to wipe out the credit card companies or lower their fees between 2-3%. And for context, the top six card holders made nearly $32 billion in profits even after reducing all of their reward programs. So it's big business. It's consolidated at the top. There's some weird carve-outs in this bill. With Amex and Discover not being eligible to forcing down the fees. So I guess some good lobbyists over at Amex and Discover. But Brandy, I know we jumped into some pros and cons of this. I am a Delta loyalist. If anyone's watched this show, they know that. So of course I have a Delta card, and Delta's partnership with Amex made $10 billion in 2023. So it was wildly profitable for them. I wouldn't mind that fee going down with that credit card. But at the same time, you know, I haven't paid for a flight for my family to join with me in years. So pros, cons.
Yeah, I, you know, reading this, I just thought, to me, it seemed like the people that are the credit card companies or the networks are trying to make it seem like this is a huge loss to consumers. But sure, there'll be some loss. But I think obviously the bigger loss is for Visa and MasterCard, who have no competition over the 80% plus share of the network control. So I don't really buy the poor consumers aspect. So, you know, I also agree, like points, great. Love accumulating those, getting the miles. But one thing that was interesting in the article, and they didn't provide a ton of data on it, but in the European Union, you know, years ago, they passed similar legislation where you had the option to choose a network, and plenty of European companies still offer rewards programs. So they probably just look a little different and you have to adapt. But right now, there's really no competition for these merchant processing fees, and the consumer ends up paying for those anyways. And these, you know, these expensive cards, like I have, like the Chase Sapphire Reserve, love the points, love all the stuff for travel. But if I didn't get a lot of perks, or they decreased and I didn't have to pay like $550 or $600 a year, like that's also fine. You know, I think that it just kind of shakes up the bubble of these kind of more like quote elite cards that you're paying a lot for to get travel benefits.
You're on mute, Will.
You're on mute.
I don't know how that happened. Who'd have? what kind of guy would mute himself? No, that's good. Thanks for the humble moment. Well, one thing, like one comment. I'm a big podcast addict in the sense of listening to other things outside of our space. And there's one show called Acquired where they do really deep dive episodes. There's only one episode a month, but they're like 3 to 4 hours long and they're highly researched, super incredible podcasts. They're not affiliated with us at all, but the podcast, they recently did an episode on Visa and the whole history of Visa from the start to where it is today in the behemoth and kind of going into the market share with MasterCard. So for anyone else that is kind of like, I don't really know a lot about this world like me, great episode to tune into. Second piece though is, I'm curious on your guys' point. There's a quote from this article on Focus Wire, saying that data from the U.S. Travel Association shows that even a 10% decrease in travel booked via credit card rewards would mean 1.5 million fewer trips and a $4.3 billion in lost economic activity for local travel businesses. How certain do you think that really is? Like, that's, well, is that really that big of an impact? Is like, I know it's much more, but
I think that those numbers are real. If there was a 10% decrease, then there would be 1.5 million fewer trips and $4.3 billion in lost economic activity. The question is, would it be 1%? Would it be 50%? Would it be 10? Or would it be zero? And when you look at the grand scheme of things, I think I saw, this one's kind of a finger to the wind, an article over the weekend that travel accounts for like $13 trillion of global spend a year. So in the end, it's a really small drop in the bucket. And to Brandy's point, like the biggest losers are going to be the credit card companies in that. For the consumer, it's theoretically lower prices or rewards points. So in theory, you don't lose.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't read the private chat. Go ahead, Brandy.
No, it's okay. You got excited. But yeah, this is like, I think that is assuming that if you don't have those points, then you're not going to travel, you're not going to spend. And I don't think that that's true. Now, I totally understand, Michael, in your personal point, like you've been paying for your family's flights with all of those extra points. And I'm sure there's a lot of people like that. But once there's a shift, people adapt. Like if you have to go see your parents wherever they live, like the whole family's going one way or another, you know, for Christmas or whatever it is, like it just kind of might change the way you allocate your funds. But then if in the grand scheme of things over the course of a year, you are saving a couple of percentage points on fees that are getting passed to you, like those savings are probably going to show up in other areas. And, you know, if I can't book a trip to Spain this year using miles, I'm still going to the wedding. So it's, you know, mm-hmm. It's still happening. I think it's a very like dramatic look at like the percentage of, you know, card users that they have and those points and what that value is, and not accounting for like a rebalancing of consumer behavior.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, I think even if the fees were lower, this is what I was convinced when reading it prior to talking to you two, was even if the fees are lower than credit, like they're not earning as many points and there's not as much point activity happening within the credit card and bank system, that the consumer is still going to spend money. Like they're not going to stop. Like they're still going to accumulate and accrue points. It's just not going to be as much in volume in the sense of per transaction. It's just going to be spread out and probably gain in more transactions, to be honest. If I'm seeing like, oh man, like all this money that I used to spend on these certain things or going shopping used to cost a lot more, I feel like I'm saving some money. Like my head as a consumer is immediately going to go, well, I can finally go get this thing then, or I'm going to go do this and blah, 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 like this activity. So my head immediately starts spending the saved quote unquote money, right? Like that's kind of how it goes.
Free money.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, and that's how I see rewards and loyalty points. It's not really points. It's just in my head, free money. I just like, okay, cool. Then go buy that ticket or go book the hotel or do whatever. And the comments are blowing up right now. So I actually kind of want to bring up this comment before we move on to Terry White. So he's, look at how many PMSs are getting into the card game. There is serious money to be made here. Maybe their biggest source of income moving forward. A little off topic, but this is something that has caught my eye recently and I couldn't agree more. Like I found out that the PMS that we use makes money for every like book direct via the Stripe integration. So they get like $3 per booking, which isn't a lot in the sense of money, but as our Book Direct goes and grows, it's pretty interesting revenue stream.
Yeah, I think the point of this, it's like these kind of like unsexy behind the scenes aspects that are actually these behemoths that make so much money. And Terry's totally right. All the PMSs are realizing that this is a revenue stream that is constant, that they is like once they build out the infrastructure, obviously you have to like maintain it. But this is if they can offer you a price that is competitive with Stripe or whatever other network that your payment processor you're using, you'll obviously use them instead of that other provider. And so I think you'll definitely continue to see that because people who control those networks, like that's controlling the money.
Yeah, this article goes into the anti-lobby arguments or pro-lobby argument where the credit card companies that exist today have been around long enough. They are secure. They're able to detect fraud, repay if there has been fraudulent activity. And if this gets broken up into smaller companies and it opens up a big pool of potential fraud or thefts and things like that. So there's always two sides to every argument. This one's an interesting one because, quite frankly, it's one I don't really care at the end of the day which way it goes. But it is an interesting one to watch. And to Terry's point, like you can go to Old Navy and they've got a credit card, Home Depot and they've got a credit card, Hilton, Delta, and like American, every big corporate American company has their own credit card and its sole purpose is to drive loyalty. So it's an interesting, world that we've gotten to this point on. But I think if you look at actual true loyalty programs, the generation behind us, behind the millennials, doesn't have a whole lot of loyalty towards anybody. So
no,
this might be the right time to rip the Band-Aid off the loyalty points.
Yeah, I think you see like that. We're talking about like the upcoming generations. It's like, what's the best value? Like, what is the cheapest price? And I like that. I'm here for it. And, you know, they were saying how like this is going to add cost to airlines. And it's like, well, that's one part of that is that airlines have become banks that offer airline services because of these credit card deals. And so it's just kind of poking at the soft holes in this like sort of, you know, bank plus service ecosystem that exists. And maybe that needs to happen because these are just, you know, these are things that haven't really been contested in a long time. So very curious to see. And like, I don't know whether I get these points or not. They also devalue all the time. So if you're hoarding a ton of points, you might want to book a trip to Thailand or something.
So the consolidation towards the top six, and it's really the top two, it's Visa and MasterCard with kind of a secondary Amex and Discover. It creates an ecosystem where you have to use one of those four cards, basically, period. And another ecosystem where you pretty much just have to use them is Google. And Google very recently has changed their SEO search algorithms. And I was completely unaware of this until the Focusrite article came out. So thank you, Focusrite, for making it known. But we've talked on the show about creating content using AI and how it's a lot easier now to kind of pull together your thoughts using AI and push it out faster and creating a bunch of content, which Google used to reward from a free search standpoint. But I think we all knew that the day was going to come where Google starts penalizing you for AI content, not just organically or you know, privately written content. And the results are kind of in. Focusrite picked out three different companies, one that hadn't seen a change, one that had seen a massive drop, and then one that had seen some pretty decent increases. So investing in content again, not through AI, is likely going to be valuable. But even then, one of the companies that had a massive decrease of traffic was an affiliate of 900 travel bloggers, and they said their content partners lost up to 75% of their traffic overnight when this change was made. So I can't imagine 900 travel bloggers are all using AI. So no one really knows what's behind this, but that's typical. We've never really known what's behind Google's their algorithms. So as a content-driven company at Storied and at Nook, it'll be an interesting to dive into the numbers myself.
Yeah, we had our monthly marketing meeting with our agency, and every month there's like an update on the latest Google update and how that's impacting the company. And we didn't see anything like dramatic in either way, but we did see some positive activity because our blogs and everything, I mean, they obviously are optimized for, you know, SEO keywords and things like that, but they're not AI written. And they were like, they're through whatever report they're doing or analysis, they can see that there's been like an uptick that our content is being marked as like valuable or whatever Google is looking at. But I think the bigger point to this kind of goes into diversifying your revenue streams, because this is something, you know, there's a huge book direct movement, and I hope Mark doesn't come for me after I say this. But I think this is also, you know, evidence that you should have a healthy mix. There are some people that do, you know, 70% of their, 80% of their bookings direct, and that's great and admirable. But I think for the average operator, you have to think about like, how strong is your presence? Like, can you compete if there are minor tweaks that no one really understands? So just making sure that you are not overly dependent on any one source.
I have a lot of thoughts and comments on this, because in recent conversations with other operators, as I'm getting ready for a fun like little series of episodes, a lot of property management companies, whether they're multifamily or single family home, venture backed, private equity, or even just bootstrapped, a lot of companies don't have CTOs. So that's one thing. Technology piece is out of touch from the operating standpoint in most cases, not every case, but in most. If you don't have a CTO or a CMO, the CMO understands the marketing side, right? Like how Google works, and maybe they understand the algorithms and a little bit of like this stuff. But the CTO understands the technology behind a lot of these things when it comes to software and algorithm changes and updates. So that's already a disadvantage for the operator. The other thing, Brandy, as you were saying earlier, is the value, right? Like when the loyalty points from credit cards are losing value, like you were saying, if you're hoarding a bunch of points, they decrease in value over time, might as well just spend them. It's the same thing. And to Paul's point, if you're not putting out content that is valuable, it's not going to be favored. And I can say from a literal content business that all we do is content, video, audio, even written sometimes. If you're not putting out good stuff, it's not going to get engagement. That's just the way it is. Yeah, you can have a good hook and you can do all these creative like marketing things to get people to click open or whatever. But if it's really not good, people are unsubscribing. They are not paying attention. And so I think in the reality of this is, we're already at the disadvantage if you don't have technology or a CTO or someone who understands the behind the scenes a little bit more, which is something I think like is really, really fascinating from an operator standpoint. And two, the value drive. If you're not actually adding value, you're just doing it to push out. Pushing out stuff is great, but at the end of the day, it needs to be worth something. And if you're not, or if it's not worth something, then you're going to see the downfall. So
I would also say that, you know, you're talking about having a CTO or a CMO, and I agree that these are kind of big blind spots in our industry. A CTO is probably going to be one of the most expensive hires that you have, and therefore one of the last, because like, are they essential to operating the business? Probably not in like that sense, but this is where I think a realistic, I mean, I definitely think that there's like how things
not
should
in run property in management.
Yeah, well,
I was exactly. Gonna say the turnover of the home, no, but in the way that your systems are tied together in order to make it efficient, yeah, like 100%.
I agree with that, but there is like how things should be, and then there's the reality of how much payroll you can afford in a month, and like, does the CTO salary fluctuate with seasonality? Like that kind of thing, you know. It's those are huge expenses, because if you have a CTO, that really means you have like another technology team beneath them. But that's not my point is that there are other ways of getting this information so that you can be a little bit more educated and that are more like cost effective. And, you know, having a really good digital marketing agency that I know that there's like, we've talked about kind of like how you find these people and that can be a little difficult, but if you find a good agency, you can have people explain to you and you can have this in your interview process of like, we are concerned about the way the Google algorithms are working. We lost X percentage of whatever, like you come to them with your problems. And then you can have someone who is more specialized that can provide you with regular guidance on like what you're doing and how it's working. Although I have been told by several people that even marketing agencies don't know, but it's a good place to start if you are like totally lost and you're seeing some negative effects from all of this.
Yeah, I want to hammer in on one point that Brandy already made, which is if your whole goal is to get 100% of bookings direct, don't, because Google could change their algorithm again tomorrow and your whole business is a big question mark. And same if you've built your business on Instagram or on Airbnb for that matter, just don't be over leveraged on any singular spot, because we've seen Airbnb change their algorithms. Verbo's changed their algorithms. Google, I don't know about Instagram, but I'm sure they've changed their algorithms many times.
Facebook, yeah.
I think diversity is key, because if one of those changes and you've got the other ones kind of at a steady state, then you'll get through it and survive. It's not too dissimilar to when COVID happened and everything got, you know, up for grabs. It's certain companies that were diversified, longer stays, shorter stays, multiple markets, not just, you know, overexposed in New York City, for example. You know, being able to get through when you're somewhat diverse in your income stream.
Yeah, and this is like what I wanted. I texted Brandy in the group chat when this article kind of came out. I was like, I want to get Doug Truitt on my show, Slick Talk, because I want to talk about the distribution play in diversity, but in the sense of also one thing that literally as a media company, we talk about is owning our viewer, right? Like we LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, all these things, all these followers that people like, these metrics that people put into play, that's renting your audience. You're renting them. You don't own anything with that audience. It really comes into the email, getting the like deeper details and the other kind of metadata behind the scenes. So it's great to rent. Like you can rent as far as you, like rent only gets you so far, basically is what I'm trying to say. So owning the customer information is where it's going to be at. And that's how you're going to overcome these Google changes, Meta changes, LinkedIn changes, even whatever kind of source or social media or algorithm play, distribution play you have, owning that is going to be the most important piece. So at the end of the day, like you need to have the distribution, you need to have the diversification, but you need to own it. You need to find a way to capture it. And Michael, if you're going to disagree with me, I would love to go on another full episode, but I think that's the only way you can combat it. There's no other ifs, ands, or buts.
Not you. Got so defensive so quick. Just adding a comment, Will.
Pretty defensive.
I've known Michael well enough to see when he's about to rebuttal.
See it in his face.
No, not at all. Will, not at all. So it goes back to a comment I made earlier where the big are going to keep getting bigger. These changes only make it easier for big companies with content departments to drive more and more content. If you're a small business with four employees, consistently building relevant, good content is hard. And paying for a third party to do it is even harder. So the big companies are ultimately going to win as a result of Google's changes. Like the great level set was AI and the ability to quickly pump out articles. But to be fair, AI articles aren't as good as human written articles. And I know that was a hot topic when we first started talking about this in February last year or something like that. It's been a long time. I think making sure your company has a strategy for good organic content is key if you want to drive free Google search and SEO. Now you can always pay for it, and that's probably what they're wanting at the end of the day. just keep people on their toes and just have people pay for it instead. Call me a skeptic.
Sorry for getting so defensive there. That's a good point, Michael.
Michael actually just changed his comment so that you, yeah. But I think my takeaway from all this stuff is if you're in, this can be in any business, but in our specific operator kind of like centric business, at least every quarter, maybe every month, analyzing your distribution mix and taking a, like within that, looking at all of your Google Analytics. And if you see any change, positive or negative, for one of them, or someone's taking more of market share than others. Like we did this when we noticed that booking.com like had this surge and was eclipsing Airbnb like pretty significantly. We want to know why these changes are happening and like what are the impacts from that. So I definitely encourage you to like deep dive into your distribution mix and those changes, and then also looking at your Google Analytics and like where those changes are coming from, and then maybe asking an expert for help if you need to like kind of dive into that a bit more.
100%. And I know Michael kind of posed another topic in our group chat over the weekend about mm-hmm. fees and other things that operators are doing, even on Book Direct. One thing that I would say though, as I'm looking at our P&L for our management company, as we're getting into like hotels and homes, is the back end revenue stream. So not just the management fee, finding ways that you can, you know, increase the margin and actually have outside, like more than one line item on your P&L or two line items on your P&L that show revenue and not expense. So finding ways, if you can get into the payment game, or if you can get a service fee here and an extra concierge fee because you're offering more, I think like the overall distribution play plus a revenue distribution play is super key from product and offering and services for your guests. So super interesting to see how this all plays out and the evolution of the business of hospitality changes. But man, what a great show. I'm excited with all these comments. There's some long, for the listeners, there's a lot of long comments I'm not going to put on screen due to the fact of we could probably go another hour on all of these. So super good stuff. Thanks to you, Tanner and Paul and Terry White and even Jeremy Weiss for all commenting in. Any final thoughts for you guys before we close out?
Nope. Just diving into the week. Another week of onboarding.
Yeah, trying to read through all of Google's changes. There were a couple of links in the Focusrite article, so go check it out. But yeah, it's definitely a deep dive. It's a rabbit hole. So
yeah,
I'll save that for another day.
Yeah.
I'll for the viewers, I'll put the links into the LinkedIn post so you guys can see it, and then I'll also put in the show notes for the audio version for everyone tuning in, just so you can geek out if you want. There's a lot of data and a lot of stuff. Yeah, like deep dives. And apparently Tanner and Paul want us to go another hour, but unfortunately, you know, it's Monday. We got team meetings. We got all those stand-ups that we got to do. I would love to. I think we're going to get a petition here going one day. People are going to push for GMH to go longer than 30 minutes, but that'll be a battle to fight in the future. Exciting stuff. I hope you guys have a great week. For anybody tuning in just now, getting into the show, if you've, you know, first time discovering Good Morning Hospitality, check out our other shows. We have our European crew happening on Tuesdays now, goes out 8 a.m. Central Europe time. And then we also have our hotel crew on Wednesday mornings, same time as this episode, 7 a.m. PST, 10 a.m. EST. And of course, like always, you know what to do to like and subscribe, follow the show. Don't be a rented audience or listener member. Go sign up for our newsletter. Let us own you and your data. And outside of that, we'll see you guys again next week.